for, I'm sorry, I should interject.
I'm sorry.
I should interject.
I'm sorry.
I want to point out for everyone on the phone that this call is being recorded. Because of, you know, we're operating in a new world at this point, so the call will be recorded. And I would also ask everyone to keep their phone on mute while they are not talking. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Executive Director Sanderson. Okay, so are we ready for a roll call then?
Yes. Commissioner Stewart?
Okay. Present.
Commissioner Settlemyer?
Present.
Commissioner Lachine?
Here and accounted for.
We have a quorum.
Thank you very much, Mally. The next order is consideration of the minutes of the regular meeting of April 14th. Is there a motion to accept?
Commissioner Settlemyer moves.
And Lachine will second.
Thank you. The motion has been properly moved and second. Is there any corrections, discussions? Okay. All right, hearing done, and so everybody had a chance to read them. All those in favor accepting the minutes of April 14th signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, it's been properly adopted. The next is reported chairperson. Just want to thank everybody who is here and to thank the staff for the good job they've been doing during this crisis we're having, a pandemic flu we're having. Having said that, I can move on to the next item of the report of the executive director.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Again, I want to thank the commissioners for making time for the board meeting this evening. The interesting thing is that we don't have any resolutions. So, you know, I think we've had enough over the past couple of months. So tonight's board meeting will be focused on reports by the executive team. I've asked them to obviously give their standard monthly reports, but also to highlight those things that have impacted us recently and how we're operating, how they've been operating over the past couple of weeks. I think you'll hear some very interesting stories this evening. It is an interesting time. We've all been very busy. We closely monitor what's coming from the federal, state, and municipal leaders because we want to make sure that we operate in tandem with them as we continue to deal with this crisis and as we contemplate what our world will look like as we put together some draft plans for reopening. So again, we want to make sure we operate in tandem with those with the various entities. Obviously, what's very important to us first and foremost is the health, safety, and welfare of obviously our staff and our resident population. And I will just again use this as an opportunity to thank the staff, the entire staff, for their efforts through this crisis. And in particular, I want to thank the executive staff for their continued focus on this organization and helping us move forward. We all continue to communicate very regularly. You get up in the morning and you see emails from people at 6 o'clock in the morning. You see emails late in the evening. So I know that people are working above and beyond to make sure that our operations are smooth. So I thank you for that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much for the report. The next item is the public comment. So I will ask if there's any members of the public who like to comment. And if they do, could they please identify their who they are and if they are one of our tenants, if they can tell what unit facility they're coming from. So therefore, I'll open it up for any comments from the public. Okay, I'll ask two more times before we come to close in case people are having trouble unmuting their phones. So a second call for any other comments from the public. Okay, and I will pass the third and final call. Any other comments from the public?
No, there's nothing for the public. This is Miguel from Smith Towers. I would like to say thank you for housing, for giving those masks out to the residents and everything, but we still need some couple more because some of the disabled people that didn't really get none.
I can address that. Good evening, Miguel. It's Annette Sanderson. So just to clarify, those masks we received those masks through a donation from an entity that doesn't necessarily want to be identified. We will do what we can do to work with the outside resources to get some additional masks. I can make a call. We are internally, obviously, we need to reserve the masks that we have in our operations department for our field operations. But Miguel, thank you for bringing that up. I will point that out and see if I can receive another donation of masks. So
okay.
if you had to guess, I mean, how many would the development be in need of?
I think Wes said about like between 20 or 15.
Okay. I will see what I can do.
Okay, thank you, Annette.
Okay, you're welcome. Stay safe.
Thank you. Jeff Stewart here, Annette, if you don't mind. I know that the city of Hartford, if you can call 311, I think they can make arrangements for a mask or a ride to get COVID testing. I'm not sure if you got information on that, but I just want to throw that I've got a bunch of emails on that. So anybody in the public, residents, other than what Annette's going to do, you can always contact 311, call 311, and they can probably help you out with that.
Okay. Thank you.
If there are no other comments from the public, we can go on to the staff reports. And Annette, you're going to walk us through that.
Sure. We're going to use the outline that's on your agenda.
Okay.
First up will be Joshua Bird, CFO.
Hello, this is Joshua. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
If I just walk through the reports as they were sent over to you, first,
Joshua?
Question.
Excuse me, Joshua, could you hold the phone a little bit closer, please?
All right.
A little more. Thank you.
Yeah, I don't get the best reception at my house. So the collection for the month started out really strong. Through the first 15 days of the month, we were actually ahead of where we were in the prior year. A lot of that comes from our regular payers who are pretty good about it, and from the people who generally pay on time or have the rent automatically deducted from their bank account. And so the beginning of the month was really strong. It tailed off at the end of the month, and this is for April. So at the end of the month, we started seeing announcements come out from the state and other places about eviction moratoriums and things like that. So I think that played into a little fall off at the end of the month. And then also what we're seeing is we're retroactively reducing some people's rent because they're coming in for recertification based on lost jobs and things like that. And so we collected 89.7% of rent, about $16,000 less than we collected in the same month last year. So it is down a little bit. It's not catastrophically down. But those two items probably play into it, is our end of the month came in lighter than normally we would expect. And there are a lot of recertifications that are bringing down rent retroactively. So that played into collections as well. The eviction moratorium is also playing a role in our 10 accounts receivable increasing. That's at the bottom of the report. That went up a fair bit from prior month, just because, usually we don't have a ton of evictions, but we would usually get a few every month that would clear out some people who have been long-term non-payers of rent. So that built up a little bit. we're trying to keep our residents informed that just because there's an eviction moratorium, that doesn't mean there's a rent moratorium, that if they do have effects to their income because of COVID or anything else, job loss, they do need to come to us and get recertified, and we will adjust their rent to the federally mandated amount. What we don't want to see is the people who are taking advantage of an eviction moratorium for 3 months, getting 3, 4, or 5 months behind, and then not being able to pay once the moratorium is over, because they've gotten too far behind. So we're trying to make sure we avoid that by keeping everybody abreast of what they do owe, letting them know that really is due. And as I said, if they do have hardship, they need to check in with the occupancy department to get their rent assessed appropriately. So that's where rent collection is. The financials kind of look funny. So if you look at the month-to-month financials for low-income public housing, this is the first set of numbers on the report. It looks like a huge loss in the month to date. It's a $500,000 loss in the month of March. That's in part, if you remember from previous reports, that's because in prior months, in January, February, federal government gave us about $580,000 a month in operating subsidy, and then in March, they trued it up and they gave us $149,000 in operating subsidy. We were overfunded a little bit at the beginning of the year. We were underfunded in March, and so it makes March look bad. But if you look at the year to date number, for the year to date, we're at a $45,000 loss versus a year-to-date budget of $191,000 loss. So we're actually ahead of budget. It's just the month of March looked very funny because we were underfunded on the operating subsidy. And it's also the month that we've paid off the few snowfalls that we had, and it's the end of the heat season, so there's the usual bump in those types of expenses that we start to see some savings on as we move through the more moderate temperatures of the spring. So the financials for low-income public housing look funny, but year to date, we've ended up actually better than where we would normally expect to be for March. Housing Choice Vouchers had their sort of usual slightly profitable month. They're up $63,000 to the good for the year so far. They had a $15,000 profit for the month of March. And the central office, had a $48,000 loss for the month of March. Year to date, they had a $51,000 gain. We do have some larger income items that come in after March. We have received a payment from Willow Creek for their lease cost. So that was about $140,000, $150,000. So the central office receives a lot more sort of one-time large payments than our other programs. So they can have months that are really, really good and months that are just okay. So March is just okay. It's a little bit of a loss, but for the year, they're still running a profit versus an expected loss for the year. And moving on to the grant summary, which is kind of interesting. It's always interesting. But for this month, it is extra interesting because we did receive CARES funding. Bill that passed Congress, the CARES Act for the COVID relief, did receive a fairly significant amount of money for HUD. HUD has divvied out that money now. I think I did ballpark the figure for you all during the last board meeting. I was pretty close on the public housing amount. We were allocated $767,000. $767,537. There was a phone call, I believe two weeks ago now, with HUD, where it was a national phone call, and they sort of laid out their vision of how the funding will work, how drawdowns will work. There was a brief Q&A session. And I feel like at the end of that, we were all a little bit more confused than we were at the beginning. So HUD has promised us a FAQ, a frequently asked question, based on the hundreds of questions that they received during that telephone meeting. That has not appeared yet. It's supposed to come out last week. It hasn't come out yet. I'm hopeful that it'll be soon. and that it will provide a lot more clarity about what we can actually use this money for. Currently, if you read the announcement, it sounds like you can use it for normal operating. If you listen to the phone call, it sounded like it was only for definite COVID reaction. And also, HUD initially said it's only for expenses after May 1st, which is when they allocated the money, which some of the national organizations that started to push back on, because if you were only preparing for COVID as of May 1st, then you've already missed the boat on preparation. We have already been out of the office for several months at that point, or a month at least at that point. So a lot of our explicitly COVID preparation expenses would have been in April and March. And so there's some pushback. We're waiting to find out from HUD on the FAQ exactly what they mean. I'm sure they're huddling with their lawyers and deciphering the congressional language, because they're late in getting that guidance out. And we're eagerly anticipating it, because we would like to tap those funds, but we're not really comfortable tapping those funds until we receive that guidance. There's also supposed to be a quarterly reporting system for this money. That quarterly reporting system has not been released. That's another sort of item that we're waiting for before we tap these funds, because we want to make sure we're keeping track of them the way that we will have to for the reporting. And HUD has essentially said these funds are very likely to be, you know, audited throughout the country. So we want to be very careful about how we use them, because we don't want to misuse funds or get audited. Like I said, for public housing, it's $767,000, which is a significant chunk of funds for us. We're very pleased to see that money come in, and we're hoping to be able to tap it soon. For housing first vouchers, I underestimated how much we got, but we ended up, I believe it's $345,000 that we'll be getting for housing choice voucher funding, for administrative funding, that we can tap to various uses, including, you know, the expenses that we have for all of the work from home things like laptops and software upgrades, things like that. So both combined is $1.1 million, which is for us a significant amount of money. So we're pleased to see it come in. We're just sort of waiting to find out how we can actually use it, how the reporting will work. And then the last part of the report is just a listing of the checks over $10,000, as usual. Most of them are the normal people, the other sources in there.
Hello?
Hello?
Okay.
Hello?
Okay.
I'm okay.
Everybody still here? Everybody's still good? I heard this beat Jeff Stewart. Everybody's okay? Okay.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right.
Still here.
Did we lose Joshua?
Did we lose Josh?
I believe so.
Oh. Oh, okay. He was summarizing up, wasn't he? Maybe he got tired of it and just took off.
So let's move on.
Okay, we'll move on. I'm going to say, if there were questions, if Joshua comes back, I guess we can go back and see if there's questions. But Annette, it's okay, we move on to operations department then?
Yes.
Okay, all right. So operations department, Maria Santron.
Good evening, this is Maria.
Maria.
The report, hi. So the report for now for me would be operations, and will include the occupancy as before, and a lot more from operations. So on the first section, you're going to be seeing work orders information. So we have an idea of how many work orders we process, and a highlight on a work order monthly report, basically just highlighting what, you know, we're doing in for that matter. If you see this little chart, we also include what in the past we called the extermination report. If you see the pest control TCP, that's basically what we have on work orders as a summary for that report. You see, for March, we didn't have anything. We put that briefly on hold, but we're back on track providing service on quarterly service and regular service, especially in on common areas and units that tenants feel comfortable letting the contractor in and providing service. You're going to see the vacancy occupancy rate. We are below the threshold. We have that task also on hold briefly on vacancy turnover and leasing efforts. So we are, that was for the month of April. And now in May, we have resumed some of the activities. So we should be seeing a better performance on this area. You're going to see the normal unit vacancy logs, where it tells you where we are with units, which one already, which one just became vacant, and the ones that are available or in a process for any application for dispositioning on other efforts. You also see property management report. Property management, right now, because of the situation, they're trying to maintain contact with the tenants, so they're calling the tenants on several aspects. Right now, what I'm capturing is that they're working on checking on the tenant for previous balances, but also checking that right now they don't require a change of the rent because of a loss of employment or whatever, you know, situation that they're being impacted, and they don't know how or where to go to report these changes. So the managers are working on maintaining this communication with the tenants. For the leasing efforts, I included what we implemented late April to have this vacant field and have some move on that area. We implemented some procedures to follow for showing units, leasing, signing leases, giving keys, obtaining the deposits and things like that, on a way that we'd expose the minimum from any end, from the applicant or our staff. So you will see basic guidelines of what we've been sharing with property managers and other staff. For unit showings and refusals, you won't see anything for April, as we were kind of, like I said, on hold. But you can see overall numbers. You're going to also see in this report the resident service coordinators. So normally she'll give a timeline of what they've been doing on a normal course, but because of how we're working, they are focused right now on contacting clients to see that everybody, you know, is doing good. And also they're working on the meal distribution that's being expanded to other locations. Normally, Smith Towers will receive certain meals, but now Kent Apartments, Mahoney Village, Betty Knox are receiving these meals, and we're looking forward to expand, if possible, these meal donations throughout our other developments. You'll also see some of the pictures that we share. These pictures were shared with the HUD staff, where the police cadets are assisting on this distribution to our tenants. And this was shared in the HUD website, Twitter, and I think our Facebook page as well. For the admissions and occupancy department, we have the two factors. We have the application side, and then we have the research side. So the applications, we also implemented certain changes on how can we continue processing applicants' eligibility, because this process requires an in-person interview and providing documentation, signing a lot of papers that are required to the program. So we've been slowly going through these applicants. That right now we had like 50 applicants that we're processing when the whole COVID situation started, so they were on hold. So now we are processing them, finalizing the process to see if we can determine eligibility and move forward with offering units and continue with those efforts. For interns, this month we see a reduction. We receive about between 15 and 20 requests for a change, and they've been processed, and that could be the reduction could be because we will continue doing annual recertification for 2 months that were briefly on hold as well. So a lot of the people that needed a change can be captured during this annual research, which people are responding very well, assisting us doing this process remotely, and we having a great response. So you will see on the annual recertification table that our numbers are maintaining a good level. And also the waiting list breakdown, and you can see the pending eligibility families are 53, and those who are on hold have been on hold for like about 2 months now. So we're processing them. Any questions?
It's Commissioner LeShane. I have a quickie, and I don't know, you know, if it's appropriate to ask now and maybe for Annette. What's the status of the COVID disease or situation of the, you know, not specific people, but just generally with the residents? Has there been an uptick of concerns or issues or actual diagnosis, or how's that working?
Well,
such tight quarters.
Here's what we know. We know that we've had two, I believe, reported cases in one of our elderly developments. And the residents, the good news is that the residents have recovered.
Oh, good.
and are doing well. They stayed for the most part in the units. There was one where we had some concern about this person may have been in one of the common areas, and so we did take this. This is about a month old at this point, maybe a month and a half. We were very proactive, and we brought in our cleaning company to do. We brought in the same cleaning company that we would use when we had fires and other big emergencies like that, and they did a deep clean of the common areas of that building. To our knowledge, we haven't had any more cases. We don't know. We have been told by the city of Hartford that they would let us know if there is a hot spot, and those were their words, hot spot, in one of our developments. So that's not to say that there have been cases of people that live in our developments. They just would not report those to me. They would report to me if we had a concentration of cases in a particular development. So to answer your question, I don't really know the answer, how many people we've had.
Yeah, and this may be a Ben question, and I don't mean to delay it, but I just feel like I have to ask the question. There's a lot of discussion amongst, you know, schools and the liability of the schools for actions, reactions related to this. And, you know, being that we're kind of a quasi-municipal agency, is there any concern that maybe the housing authority should at least seek information on the status of folks so that it can get mitigated at an early stage rather than, you know, I know the nursing homes for a while weren't really seeing it as an issue, and now they're facing a huge situation. I don't know what the answer is, but I just feel like I have to ask the question.
Ben, I don't know if you want to jump in from a legal perspective, and then I have something else to add.
Sure. I mean, right now what we're doing, you know, what we've been doing as far as operationally is when we've had something get confirmed, then we've done some cleaning protocols and some other things. We've closed up all the public spaces to the extent that we can, shut down, you know, all break rooms and the common areas and all that in our developments. So I think, I mean, we're doing everything that we can to make sure that we minimize anybody's risk. We're following all the state guidelines as far as we can on maintenance as well, as far as keeping things clean and keeping, obviously, emergency-type maintenance going but not doing some of the other maintenance. And I know John and Maria have been talking with our emergency service contractor too on best practice. So I think we're in pretty good shape based on everything I've read and seen.
Mm-hmm. So you don't think, and I'm not trying to make a judgment on the schools, but, you know, in the last 2 days, they've raised the issue both in the recovery task forces that they feel that they have a liability if everyone comes back to school and someone comes in because of the social distancing and all that kind of stuff, how are they going to control that with kids? Somebody who's been healthy comes into the school and 2 days later ends up with a negative diagnosis, and then the school is articulating in these meetings that they feel that they would be liable for it. So, like, in the social the things that you can't control, the social distancing and all that kind of stuff, and let's say a resident were to find out they had a diagnosis and something, you know, unfortunate happened, you think there's enough protections with what the authority has in place to cover that?
So we're talking about, like, we're not talking about administrative offices. We're talking about, like, in one of our developments.
And not that you're not doing a great job in disinfecting and responding, but, like, what would be, you know, what's your feeling on the situation that the schools are claiming is significant?
Well, if I could just jump in here, I believe as much as we can do in terms of, you know, promoting social distance. The fact of the matter is that, you know, people do live in close proximity to each other.
Mm.
And people do need to, you know, and we're not allowed by HUD to just send the population out and say, okay, every other unit. We just couldn't do that. I mean, if anything, HUD continues to put pressure on us to lease up the units and to provide them with a monthly leasing plan in terms of how we're going to be proactive in terms of leasing up these units. So I hear you loud and clear, but there's only so much social distance that we can promote. The fact of the matter is that people do live in close proximity to each other. They do need to use elevators in the buildings where there are elevators. Because we're talking about, you know, significant elderly and disabled population. So we're not going to know because of HIPAA rules and regulations. We can't demand to know who is positive. We just won't know. They won't tell us.
Yeah.
And I believe that should be the case. But I have been told that we will be told if there's a hot spot in one of our developments.
Okay. Again, I'm not suggesting anything. I just have been hearing all of this and, you know, wondering what the professionals thought about the potential.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting question, definitely. And I think just to build a little bit on Annette's point too, because we have apartments, you know, we've been open, right? Because people can't just leave. So maybe that makes it a little bit different. I'm not, you know, I don't know, because I just haven't really seen that much directly on point with apartment buildings.
Yeah, it's more school campuses and stuff. You know, the housing that it came up the biggest on residential living in overnight camps, stuff like that.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Were there any other questions on Maria's report from anybody else? Okay, Annette, if you don't mind, if Joshua is back, I'm not sure if anybody had questions on the financial report. Are you back, Joshua?
I am back. I'm sorry, I didn't realize I dropped off. I plowed straight through my whole report, so I have no idea where I stopped with you all.
Okay, I think you did get to the end before we heard you go away. But were there any other questions on Joshua's report? Okay. Okay, hearing none, then I guess we can move on to Lisa's report. Development and capital improvements.
Thank you. Good evening, commissioners. I'd like to start my report discussing two of our larger developments, that being Westbrook and Willow Creek. I'll start with Westbrook. The demolition of phases 1, 2, and 3 is complete. As of today, there's about six or so buildings remaining on the site, so demolition will be completed by the end of this month. Construction of phase 1 is nearing completion, and construction of phase 2 is underway, and they've obtained the financing for phase 3. If I can direct you to the photos that are included in the report, just to sort of guide you to where you are looking at these photos, that first photo is phase 1. So as you can see, all of the buildings have been constructed. They'll be finishing up on finishings and doing the landscaping, and they'll be looking to occupy those this year. And I can discuss more about how that process is going to go. The photo below that, the units that are in the process of being constructed is the commencement of phase 2 of the development. And so, as you can see, that is well underway. And these photos, by the way, were taken as of, I believe, the end of April, so they're fairly current. The third photo shows a aerial photo of phases 1 and 2, and then in the background, towards the top, is phases 3 and 4. So as you can see, all the buildings have been demolished and taken down. And the last photo, which is a sweeping photo of the majority of the site, shows you phases 3, 4, and 5. So as you can see, there's only a few buildings remaining up towards Albany Avenue, and those will come down by the end of the month. So they're proceeding quickly. Demolition will be completed by the end of this month, and they'll be ramping up for their leasing. And so they're going to be conducting a lottery for eligible applicants with former residents of Westbrook Village who left the development in good standing, having a right to return, and they're in the process of being contacted, these residents, by the relocation specialist that has been retained by the developer. They're called Housing Opportunities Unlimited. They're canvassing now the interest for those that have occupied the site before, their interest in returning. And so, as I mentioned, these individuals would have first priority in the lottery process, followed by individuals on the Housing Authority's wait list. And so they anticipate that the lottery period will be about 30 days. But in anticipation of the lottery and the application process, what they're doing is they're doing public outreach to the community in anticipation of questions being asked to the process and eligibility. And they'll be doing that through various methods. They'll be doing that through social media, on various media platforms. They're going to be crafting an executive summary, a community update, and they're going to be going in depth in that update, detailing various aspects of development, demolition, as well as the lottery and leasing processes. And that'll get posted on not only their website, Village at Park River, but there'll also be a sort of a link to that on our site as well. But most importantly, they're also going to be meeting with the community, the leaders of the various NRZs and other community organizations, such as, you know, Upper Albany NRZ, Upper Albany Development Inc., the Merchants Association, the Design Committee, the Civic Association, through virtual meetings in order to inform them of what the process is for not only leasing, but the also more information as it relates to the development itself. Our next development is Willow Creek, which is our former Bowles Park housing development on Granby. They're continuing to obtain their financing for the project and the continued development of the site. Currently, on phase two, they're having a loan conversion is currently in process, which is expected to be completed in June. For phase three, they submitted a pilot agreement, payment in lieu of taxes agreement application to the city of Hartford. Their closing with the Department of Housing is in process, and they've submitted a federal home loan bank application, or they're going to apply the submission is due June 1st. General updates as it relates to the site as a whole and how COVID has affected them. They've postponed some maintenance items and repairs until after the COVID pandemic, but they're addressing critical items, and they have a strict protocol in place for entering residents' homes and interacting with residents. In terms of the site itself, Hatch will be looking at the extent of repairs that's needed for the perimeter sidewalks and fencing at the development, and will be working towards a long-term maintenance agreement for that site. The developers are also looking to put in some landscaping in front of the community area that was reserved for future phases, and they have some preliminary landscaping plans. They're in the process of pricing those out, and then they will present those to the housing authority so that we can work in concert with them to develop that. We've given them the contact for Knox in the hope that perhaps there could be some form of a partnership there as it relates to that effort. Our next development project is Smith Towers. So as you know, at our last board meeting, there was an award to Pioneer Builders of Newington, Inc. We held a contract signing conference shortly thereafter, after the board meeting. Their initial work will include installing a trench drain in the basement to eliminate water infiltration issues at the basement level of the elevator shaft. What was happening is there was some flooding there, so they need to address that. They'll be ordering and manufacturing the components for the elevator themselves. Are you all still there?
Yes, I am.
Jeff, okay. I'm here. Yes.
I heard a beep, and so I was afraid something happened to me as it happened to John. Okay. And so we'll be posting, once they commence the work in the basement, we'll be posting or distributing signs to the tenants just to let them know that the trench work will be commencing, not so much the elevator work. The elevator work won't happen until later in the fall, so just to let them know and be aware of what's happening. They do have the contractors do have COVID procedures, and they will be have a COVID policy. They will be designing or putting together a project-specific COVID policy for Smith Towers so that we can ensure that everyone is safe. One other project I'd like to mention is just our 110 Kensington Street. We've been completed with that one, with the rehabilitation of that unit. We're excited to put it on the market. The restrictions that have been in place have sort of stunted our effort to do so, but we're hopeful that we can begin to market that property in the spring or early summer, and we're going to use the proceeds to fund our rehabilitation efforts at our other LIPH properties. Does anyone have any questions?
Thank you, Elisa. Yeah. I just want to talk a little bit more about Westbrook. And emphasize the fact that it will be a lottery system, and it will not be a first-come, first-served system, because we wanted to make sure that everybody had a fair chance of getting in their application, a pre-application, and then having that pre-application placed in a lottery system. So what we envision will happen will be that a lottery, you know, will take pre-applications for a month, for 1 month, and then at the end of that, those pre-applications will be placed in a lottery system, and that lottery will number your application and place you on a wait list. And that wait list will be used to house people through the various, at least the first 2 to 3 phases, that wait list will be used. So, again, you know, I know that some communities do a first-come, first-served type of application. I think that because of the demand that for those units, there'll be a lot of applications. I get emails, I get calls, I get texts from people that I know wanting to know how they can, you know, find out more about the leasing effort at Westbrook Village. So there is a website. There is a website that they can go to and fill out their information. And once the leasing period opens, they will receive direct a direct communication from the leasing entity company of entity that we're using via Penrose, and they will be told how to get an application. So it's going to be very interesting. It'll be interesting to see how many applications we ultimately receive. I think it'll be a lot.
Okay. Thank you, Annette. No other questions for Alicia or Annette? Okay. If not,
hey,
we can go on to... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, in full disclosure, I went to put my mute microphone on and I hung up. So that was me bleeping out and bleeping back.
Okay. You're back. Okay. All right.
Sorry.
All right. You're back. No problem. No question, right? You're okay, right? Okay.
Yeah, I'm fine. Yep.
Okay. The next one is our HCV Section 8 report for Katrina.
Good evening, Commissioners. So as we continue to work remotely, the HCV staff have been continuing to do all the functions of the department. That includes interim research, annuals, moves, lease ups. The forms were posted online for the applicants and participants to have the ability to complete the forms and either email them, fax, send them in the mail. However, they can get it to us. We're accommodating them, along with the Dropbox that was installed. The IT department continues to work with us if we're having issues with the computers or the servers. Our inspection department continues to do reinspections, special inspections, and initial inspections. Our annual inspections have turn to biannual basis, so until the COVID pandemic is over, and then we'll go back to inspecting our units on an annual basis. We had, or I had participated in a webinar for landlord outreach, so in the next couple months, I'll be establishing like group meetings, so landlords are more aware of what the program is for and how they would be able to retain the tenants that they have and become better landlords with the HQS process. HQS are the inspections. The interims that we've been doing, on the report, I put a comparison of 2019 and 2020. So April was, there was a big jump in April when we did start working remotely. When I conducted the report, May, we were just into May, so not a lot were completed as of then, but it still continues to be a lot of interims, people continuing to lose their jobs, and we're making the changes appropriately. Some of the programs that the HCV administers are, again, the FUP program, which is Family Unification Program, and this is for families that are working with the Department of Children and Family. They have to be either aging out or they would be unifying with their, back with their children. This is a referral-based program, so we continue to get referrals. We have a total of 83 vouchers that were allocated, and we are almost at the 80%. We have all the referrals, and we would meet the 80% if the families leased up. We have until June, the end of June, to get this, get the 80%. We also administer HUD-VASH. We have 168 vouchers. That's also a referral-based program from the Department of Veterans Affairs. We have mainstream vouchers. We were allocated 45. We continue to take them off of our wait list. We did get an extension due to the COVID pandemic, so we're hoping with the people that we've issued, that we would reach the 80% by the end of June. We have the RAD and PBV program. And I think we have a couple vacant units that we are processing now to get leased up. And I included another report instead of the basic report that I usually provide you guys with. So this report is the VMS report that I use to report to HUD, and it has the breakdown of each program, the portability, and what the expenses are associated to the different programs. So we have a total of 2,161 that are leased up for the entire program. And the breakdown would be, for example, the regular vouchers, we have 1,616 that are currently leased, and the HAP associated with it is to the right where it says current HAP. So this report can change throughout the month depending on if someone leased up after the first, in the middle of the month. So I could run this report each day, and it could give me different numbers. Is there any questions on my report?
Okay, any questions, anybody? All right, thank you very much, Katrina. Thanks for the additional information. The next one is our contract and compliance registry, Ben Bear.
Hello, it's Ben Bear. We kind of talked a little bit about some compliance stuff earlier tonight. We've been keeping up with all the different guidance that's coming down, whether it's from HUD or from the state or some stuff from the city of Hartford too. And we've been updating our business plan as we've been going along here. And I sent you the most recent one along with the report, along with the governor's potential partial reopening on May 20th. We're looking at developing a reopening plan as well, even though we've never really been fully closed. We thought it was a good idea to develop a going forward plan. I sent a draft of that around to the operational folks and to HR and to Annette just kind of right before this meeting. We're using pretty much the state guidelines on reopening for that, along with some other things that Annette had gotten emailed to her, and then with a couple of other things as well. And let's see. So with that, as Joshua mentioned, we're working on trying to get clarification on the CARES Act funding and how we can spend that. As Joshua mentioned, the call was very frustrating in that there were a lot more questions raised than answered. But we'll see how that goes. And there have been some of the trade organizations that we keep track of or are part of have also submitted comments to HUD on the way that they want to administer those funds. And so those things have been in line with kind of what we thought too. So we're keeping tabs on all that. As you can see, there's some other compliance stuff going on. And then on the procurement side, we've been busy. We have out a couple of procurements right now. We're working on getting a couple more out, some of them for our bigger contracts, and we'll be coming back to you with some resolutions over the next few months. And probably the biggest part of the report was what Annette mentioned, was that I don't have any resolutions for you tonight. So I guess that's a welcome break.
Yes, it is. Sorry. Not that I don't mind doing resolutions, but thank you. Sorry. Go ahead. There's a question. Were there any questions? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I just wanted to, hi, it's Annette. I just wanted to point out that at the tail end of Ben's report is a memo from the city of Hartford regarding, and it's addressed to residential management companies. I think that kind of goes to some of the things that we were discussing earlier in terms of measures that should be taken, as well as notification of COVID-positive individuals in our building. And the last paragraph, the last section of that memo states that we will not, generally, the City of Hartford's Department of Health and Human Services will not notify us in our building if someone tests positive. However, they will notify us if there's a need to mitigate, if there are, I think it says, three or more positive cases in a particular building. So it's a pretty interesting memo, so you might want to take a look at it.
Yeah, thanks for bringing that. This is Patty LaShane. Thanks. I had not seen it, so thank you. That's great.
Yes, that's it. It's the last document in BIN's report.
Yeah, I just pulled it up. Thanks.
Oh, okay. No other questions for BIN then? Okay. Then the next one is the termination report, Annette. The last
sure,
item.
I mean, yes, okay. The last item, and quite honestly, Maria made reference to it earlier. Mm-hmm. There were four pest control work orders generated during the month. In the future, this report will be incorporated into the overall operations report. But the numbers, the report speaks for itself in that it just details what was done and where it was done in terms of the need to do immediate pest control.
Okay. Any questions on the report from anybody? Okay. Hearing none, then the next item is old business. Is there any old business that we have?
There is no old business. I should point out that our next board meeting is scheduled at this point for the first Tuesday of the month, and that would be June. Oh, somebody help me with that date, please. June, what's the first Tuesday? June 2nd. So it's the first Tuesday of the month as opposed to the second Tuesday of the month. Usually at that board meeting, we present the draft of our audited financial statements. We would normally have our outside auditor come in and make a presentation, but considering what's been going on over the past couple of months, they have not yet had time to begin their work. So we will not be in a position to present a preliminary draft to the board the first week in June. So we do know that we will have just a few resolutions for that board meeting. And at this point, it is scheduled for June 2nd.
Okay.
Hey, Jeff, I did have a little bit of old business. We had talked about us owing Annette in a performance evaluation. Is there any status on a meeting or conference call or something that we should probably be thinking about in the next month?
I'll get back to you guys on that one. Yeah, that is outstanding business.
Okay.
If there's no other old business, is there a motion for adjournment?
A move for adjournment, LaShane.
LaShane, okay.
Commissioner Settlemyer, second.
Okay, great. So in the second, I guess we vote on that, right, Ben? All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Okay.
Aye.
No abstentions, opposed. Okay, we're done. So everybody have. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you, team, for a great job.
All right. Yeah. Thanks.